Welcome to another fabulous podcast of the On The Record podcast series. We are the two Mikes. You are Mike Parry.
I am Mike Porky Parry.
And I'm Mike Graham. And
you
of
are?
Course, we do this twice
yeah.
a week.
Yeah.
We get it through Audio Boom. You can get it through Spotify. You can get it at a whole variety of different places, like Podbean, for example, on iTunes as well.
Yeah.
Look out for it. We do a Porky Vision. We do a Porky review of books.
Yes.
We also do, of course, an Ask Porky.
Mm-hmm.
Today's edition is a Porky Vision, where you tell us all what you've been watching on TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then tell us all whether it's worth watching.
Absolutely. Right, now, there's a great show I've been watching, okay?
Yeah.
And it's called Escape at Dannemora.
Escape at Dannemora?
Escape at Dannemora.
Sounds Irish.
No, it's not Irish.
No?
It's American.
Oh, yeah.
And Dannemora, excuse me, bit of the old winter.
You've got a bit of redux, or whatever it's called.
Well, a bit of the old
reflux.
Winter. No, no, not reflux, just a sort of slight strangulation of the throat.
Oh, okay. You want to watch that?
Yeah, I do, yeah, because it's not easy to
talk. Because you don't want to get anything involved which is, in fact, going to restrict your breathing.
Right, now then, this is called Escape Dannemora. It's a brilliant, brilliant show, okay? And it's on something like Sky Adventure or something. Sky Adventure or Sky something.
Okay.
But anyway, it's what it is, Dannemora is small town America.
Oh, okay.
In New York State, north of New York State.
Okay.
But the whole town
beyond the Poconos.
Could be beyond the Poconos, could be up near the Canadian border.
Ah.
But the whole, it is near, up near the Canadian border.
Right.
And the whole town is dominated by a massive high security jail.
Okay.
Top security jail.
Okay.
Which houses, excuse me, bit of the old winter.
Are you going to be all right? Do you think, do you need some water or something?
I don't need water. I'll get a glass of water if I need one. Now, let me tell you.
Is it like, do you know that place, Marion, I think, Marion, Illinois? Where the big federal penitentiary is.
Well, that's the highest security jail in America. Yeah. Most of it's underground.
Yes.
Did you know that?
That's where
they put John Gotti.
John Gotti
in there. All the cells are underground, literally. Mm. There's no natural daylight for the prisoners to make sure they can't escape, right?
Yeah.
And this Dannemora plot might explain why they have to go to those sort of extremes.
Right.
Now, it's absolutely brilliant because it shows the sheer intensity and, in my view, hopelessness of being in jail in America. There's no way out. I mean, you know.
When you get sent to jail for life in America,
you do life.
There.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't come to you after 5 years and go, "Oh, he's allowed to come out
now." No.
You think you're okay.
You know the woman who was the subject of the Bob Geldof song, "I Don't Like Mondays."
Yes,
she is still in jail 38 years later.
She didn't get the death penalty.
She didn't get the death penalty. She's in jail 38 years later, and she will never be released. Mm. She got life without parole.
Okay.
And in America, life without parole means life without parole.
Do you know, I actually got somebody off death row.
What?
I got somebody off death row.
How come?
Because I campaigned on the behalf of the Daily Mirror.
Really?
To get a guy called Kenny Ritchie, who had been put on death row in America for the murder of a woman.
Yes.
And I think maybe a son as well. This was a guy who had emigrated to America from Scotland.
Yes.
Right? And was a bit of a ne'er-do-well, if you want, God's honest truth.
Sure.
Got involved in some kind of scenario where he was living with a woman and her son.
Yeah.
Can't remember if the son was his or not. Not sure. There was a sort of fight ensued because she had been caught in bed with somebody else.
Mm.
The allegation was that he then went off and found some petrol, poured it in the letterbox and set fire to the house.
Oh, wow.
And
she
died inside.
I remember that one.
And he was found guilty of murder in somewhere like, I think it was Illinois. He didn't go to Marion, but he went to a high security prison.
Yeah.
We campaigned to get him off, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I'm beginning to think he's actually guilty.
Yeah.
Because I met him.
Right.
He came to the studios in Edinburgh.
Well, after you got him out.
After we got him out,
so you didn't just get him off death row to serve life. You got him out.
Got him out altogether.
Got
the whole conviction quashed, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole 9 yards, paid for the lawyer and everything.
Yeah.
But now I'm beginning to think I shouldn't have bothered.
No, you shouldn't have bothered. When I was in the mid-80s, I went over to California to do a case about a kid who'd been taken there by his father. He was 18 years of age. And he got immediately into the California drug scene. Off his head one day, broke into the neighbour's house because there's rather an attractive woman living next door, raped her and killed her. He got life without parole and will do every day of his life.
How did he not get death penalty?
No idea. I think it's because he was so young. I think it's because he was 18.
Yeah.
And he's still in that jail today and will be in that jail until he dies.
Yeah.
I mean, from 18, if he lives till he's 78, he has spent 60 years in jail.
Incredible.
Why would you bother? I'd find a way to kill myself.
Well,
I would.
This is one of the big debates that people have, isn't
yeah.
it? Is there any point in having death
no,
row?
No.
Is there any point in having... Because a lot of people who get yeah. sent to death row
yeah.
don't actually ever get executed.
No, that's right.
Because they get repeal after repeal after repeal.
That's right, 25 years or something like that.
Similarly, what's the point of keeping somebody locked up
that's
for
that
length
right.
of time?
But anyway, let's get back to Dannemora, because it's
Dannemora.
Such a brilliant show.
Okay.
Now, have you ever heard of an actress called Patricia Arquette?
Patricia Arquette, yes.
Yeah, she's course, quite famous.
Very famous, yeah.
Right, well, she's...
I believe she's got a sister called Roxanne.
Oh, is that
Arquette.
Roxanne's sister? Okay, yeah.
yeah.
All right. Now, first of all, let me tell you something about this.
Yeah.
It's all about this jail. It dominates the town. Almost everybody in the town works at the jail,
uh-huh.
including Patricia Arquette, who plays Joyce Mitchell,
okay.
known as Tilly.
Tilly?
Known as Tilly.
How do you get known as Tilly?
I don't know, but
Joyce.
Her name's Joyce Mitchell, known as Tilly.
I thought Tilly was short for Matilda.
Yeah, I did as well, but no,
Joyce
Mitchell is Tilly. Anyway, they make her out to be a very plain woman, okay?
Yeah.
With sort of tumbling
She's
hair
She's not
locks.
That young, is she, now?
She's not that young, middle-aged, I'd say,
right.
middle-aged. Tumbling hair locks,
yeah.
right? Round sort of what I would describe as National Health Service glasses. Mm. But an enormous bust,
really.
And what I couldn't
no,
work out, what
no,
I couldn't work
like
out,
it.
What I couldn't work out from the first episode, right, and there's now been like six of them, right.
Right.
I couldn't work out, and she's in charge of the sewing shop inside the prison.
Okay,
she's in charge of what's called the tailor shop or something like that.
I
you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And there's probably 20 or 30 lags, and it's an all male prison, by
right.
the way.
So, 20, is she, so she's in touch with all these guys, is she?
20, 30 lags in the sewing shop, in the tailor shop, right? And she sits at a big desk at the top, you know, and overlooks everything.
Her there.
Well, this...
Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette, but made up into what she is in the show. It's like this, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Now, what I was going to say is, for some unknown reason, she wears incredibly tight tops,
right.
very low cut... An open cardigan over her enormous bust, which is sticking out, and you'd have thought, you'd honestly thought that somebody who runs the jail would have said, "Tilly, this is a little bit provocative.
Yeah.
These guys will never see a woman again the rest of their life, you know. And I think you should wear something a little less obvious." Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway,
I'm just going through a series of pictures. By
yes,
way,
that's right. Yeah.
While you're doing that.
So anyway, what happens is. In about the first episode,
right.
Tilly, because she's in charge, is the only one who has the key and access to the control room
yeah.
where all the machines, which are out here, run off a generator in the control room.
Right.
And if anything goes wrong, that's going to be fixed in the control room.
Uh-huh.
So she says, you know, every prisoner's got a name. So we'll say this guy's name is Corbin. You know, I don't mean Jeremy Corbyn. But we call him...
and they picked at random.
Yeah,
hey, Corbyn.
Yeah, we'll call him
Corbyn.
What
Corbyn. Are
you in for? Yeah, Corbyn. Corbyn. Your machine's gone down. Come with me into the control room. We'll fix it.
Yeah.
So she opens the control room with a key, goes in, locks it. Then she bends over a desk.
Right.
And Corbyn... Oh, it's not Jeremy Corbyn, obviously. It's
no,
not Corbyn.
No.
We'll call him Corbyn for saying.
Yeah, yeah.
He lifts her skirt, removes her underwear... And gives her a complete Rogerizing.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Well, and this is in plain view of all
no,
everybody else?
No,
what?
Because the door's closed, isn't it, to the control room.
Well,
I've just
know.
Told you. Yeah,
well,
I've just
I
told
know if
you.
There's a window. She, I don't know.
No. It's
what's Corbyn in for?
Well, some terrible murder in this thing because they're all lifers, you know, they're never going to get out. So she goes, oh, that's great, darling. Oh, that's good. Oh,
yeah,
you know.
There's no necessity for that.
No. So this only takes about 5 minutes
right.
or something like that, and then you know she comes out.
It
rearranges.
Sounds fairly graphic. This
it is very graphic. It's very graphic.
Is it like 15 or something?
I don't know. I watch
they
it late
do rate
at night.
TV now.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I'm sure you do watch it.
But,
late at
but
night.
Anyway, so
you want to watch again?
Yeah. So she comes out, right?
Yeah.
She comes out, and
she
you know,
pulled her knickers back up.
Well, obviously, you know, she's not going to walk around, you know, unrobed, is she? And then she goes and sits back in a chair like nothing's happened.
Right.
But all the other cons are looking at each other and winking and
yeah.
all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Now, the point is, where this becomes, you know, rather sort of deceitful is that her husband is
she's
also...
Her husband?
Yeah. He's a prison guard
okay.
in the same prison.
That's
so they go to bed every night,
he's
right?
He's probably carrying a gun around as well, isn't he?
I don't know. And they get up in the morning, they drive to work and she says, yeah, bye-bye, darling. And he goes to do whatever he does in the prison.
Yeah.
I mean, the prison's the size of a city,
yeah,
get
yeah.
it right, okay?
Right.
And then she goes to her tailor shop,
right.
and then about two
Jerry
episodes
Corbyn appears again.
Yeah. About two episodes later, Carbon has got a conscience and decided that right. if it gets out that he is shagging this woman...
So it's not just a one-off then?
Oh, no, it's a regular thing. Oh, okay. They do it all the time. Oh,
okay.
His machine keeps
in the same spot?
Yeah, yeah. He keeps sabotaging his machine and saying, Tally, my machine's broken down. Yeah. Okay, we better go and fix it.
Okay.
They go in the control room and wham, wham, thank you, ma'am, and all that sort of stuff. Jesus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, old Carbon gets a bit of a conscience and thinks... If her husband ever gets transferred onto my block and finds out, I'm a dead man.
Well, exactly. It's not so much a conscience though, as if he's shitting himself.
But the reason he's done that is because the bloke sitting next to him on the next machine has said, hey, Corbin, you should be careful. And Corbin says, why? And the guy on the next machine says, the spouse always finds out.
Yeah, he's right about that.
And Corbin says, you think so? He says, yeah, definitely. You should give it up now.
Right.
So Corbin gives it up. So she gets all upset.
Oh.
So the next machine that breaks down is the bloke who's advised Corbin to give it up.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, Tilly, my machine's broken down, right? And she says, you better come into the control room so we can fix it. So they go in the control room.
Right.
Yeah. Guess what happens? She slides to the floor.
Right.
And then the shop pulls away when she's removing the belt buckle on his trousers, you see.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway...
For a bit of sort of vertical refreshment.
Well, it's not even vertical refreshment. Mm. I mean, we are talking here about, performing a sexual action. You know what I mean?
A lewd act, as it's called in the news.
So anyway, what happens then is that...
Well, what does Corbin make of all this?
Well, Corbin doesn't care. No, he doesn't care because he didn't want to be involved anymore.
Oh, okay.
Now, what happens then is that the guy, we'll call him Danny, the second
Danny,
guy.
Okay.
Yeah, Danny. And he's very sort of Italian-American with dark black hair, He... He then performs other sort of acts on her, yeah, a lot of them. Yeah,
sounds filthy, this show.
It's disgraceful. It is disgraceful. Instead of the old thromba, from behind, she says, oh, I want you to look at me when we're,
He says, at me.
Oh, okay. So he turns her over and puts her on the desk, And I mean, it's just graphic stuff, what I mean? It's not Family View.
So he's standing up at this point.
He's standing up, yeah.
She's on the desk.
So anyway... He then decides that he can use her in whichever way he wants. So he starts paint. He's also an artist back in his cell, Danny.
Oh, yeah.
And the cells, by the way, are just like Escape from Alcatraz. Mm. Cells in American jails are all open-fronted with bars.
Yeah.
And there are bars at the side, so you see into your mate's jail and all that. You have to request a curtain to close it all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right.
So anyway,
it depends. I mean, the guy Kenny Ritchie, because I first started talking to him when he was still in prison,
right on the phone,
and he described it. It was great. It used to go on the radio, and you'd get this this message that came up first, which says, "You are receiving a telephone call from an Illinois state penitentiary." Or
right,
like that,
brilliant,
man,
yeah,
which was fantastic.
Yeah,
radio.
yeah.
And he described that he had like a slit for a window,
right.
So you could just literally look through about an inch wide. It was all the way down the length, the height of the cell.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was only an inch wide.
Right.
So you really couldn't get much light in it.
And that was only his view. His only view to the outside
world.
Golly, yeah. So anyway, so he then decides he's going to use this woman. And because he's a painter, he's got something going with one of the prison guards. There are corrupt prison guards throughout this prison, okay? And this prison guard somehow keeps his paint for him, for his paintings, because he paints great portraits for all the prison guards.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A bit like in The Shawshank Redemption, where the guy who's the star did all the tax accounts for all the... You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Because he was an accountant.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So he has so much paint, it's against the rules, and one of the guards stores it in his guards room, okay? So he goes in, this guy Danny, and says, I need my yellow paint or something. And he says, okay, it's in there.
Right.
And he points to a door, he goes in, and he finds that this door he's gone into is actually a duct which goes down through the air conditioning system.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Right.
And he stays in there for a few minutes, realises that he can actually see his mate's cell and the grill from his mate's cell into this duct.
Okay.
And then starts hatching an escape plan. Mm. Now, then he decides Tilly needs to be more useful, so he starts giving her more adventurous sex, right, every time they get into the control room.
How much more adventurous can it get?
Well, who knows? I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't want to get into that, But, starts then talking about how they could have a life if he escaped.
Yeah.
Now, this stupid woman, you know what I mean? You'd think she'd heard that a million times and all that. She then starts smuggling files into Danny
right.
by... arranging for him to get parcels of meat. Because you're allowed to cook in your own cell, uh-huh. and if you apply right. for a cooking license and right. all this.
Don't they check everything when it goes in, though?
Well, you'd have thought so, but no. You see, you're putting the files into this, like, what they call chip meat in America, yeah, you yeah. know, which you call mince, you
yeah,
know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, chuck.
And yeah, yeah. And nobody checks it. So he's now got files. The first guy I was talking about, Corbyn,
yeah.
right, is smaller than him.
Right.
So Corbyn volunteers to go through the grill in his cell.
Right, so he's in on it as well.
He's in on it as well, and they're going to break out together. Mm. We're now at the stage, I don't want to tell the listeners where it all ends up, but I mean, he's then said he's going to meet Tilly in Mexico right. once he's broken out. She maybe, now knows.
Well, maybe he's watched the Shawshank Redemption and he thinks he can be the guy from the Shawshank Redemption.
Maybe. But she now knows and is actively taking part in the escape plot. And they've got pictures of her in the small town they live in. It's got one, like, ladies' shop. And yeah. she's going in buying bikinis and all this from Mexico. Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic in the way that the delusion is suddenly setting in and all that. He even gets her from his cell window to walk to a particular spot with in the ground so he can see over the wall how far they've got to go to get out. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Through the air conditioning right. system. And I don't want to tell you anything too much now, but she's now convinced that, you know, they're going off to Mexico, they're going to start a new life there.
Hasn't she got kids or anything?
No, they haven't actually. They don't seem to have kids. There's no kids. But at the same time, the prison officer who's married to Tilly is desperately trying to save his 20-year marriage to her. I don't think they have got kids. I haven't seen any kids. Or have I? Maybe they've got grown-up kids. Yeah, they've got grown-up kids. Yeah. Got grown-up kids, right? And he's trying to do romantic things like inviting her out on their anniversary for dinner. But guess what, Mike? This is such small-town America. Mm. The only thing they've got is a diner.
Yeah.
I mean, literally,
yeah.
an American diner on the highway. You know what I mean? And she's saying, this is not very romantic. You know, I prefer to be on a beachfront in Mexico. Yeah. Giving you all sorts of clues about what's going to come next, you know.
It's not going to end well, is it?
Well, it doesn't sound like it's going to end well, because clearly what's going to happen, and you don't have to be a genius to work this out, is when Danny and Corbyn break out, they want Tilly as the getaway driver. That's no doubt about that. But then they're either going to fucking murder her or tell her to go in that shop and get us some goods and then push off in the car.
Or they're going to get caught escaping.
Yeah.
And then she's going to get arrested.
Well, we know something's going to happen because in the very first episode, it's all flashback stuff where she is being interviewed by the authorities.
See how good am I at this?
Exactly. Exactly.
I told you that's what's
she
happening.
Is being interviewed by the prison authorities about what she knew about these men. Did you have a sexual relationship? No, they raped me. You know. Well, how could they rape you when they took you into the control room, but you seem to take them in there all the time?
Well, indeed.
And all I mean, honestly, it's going to be fascinating stuff. Right. I don't want to say too much, okay?
Well, that was a fascinating insight into a programme that I've never heard
of.
Oh, yeah. What else have you been watching then?
Right, now, I tell you this. This is going back a few years, but it still made a huge impression upon me this week. A huge impression.
Yeah.
I watched from start to finish. Na, 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 na. Na, 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 na,
na.
Dr. Zhivago.
One of the most
fantastic films
I've
ever seen.
It's very long, that film, isn't it?
It goes
on for about 3 hours.
3 hours, that's right. But what
Omar
a
Sharif.
What a fantastic film. Have you ever seen it?
Of course I've seen it.
Julie Christie.
Yeah, I think I saw it in the cinema when it first came out.
Utterly fantastic. You've got to go and watch it again.
Well, I've seen it several times since then.
Utterly fantastic.
It's very old now, though.
It's the most poignant love story I've ever watched. I mean, I had to restrain myself from crying.
Really?
Yeah,
I've never cried.
I've never cried, but when I saw the sheer
softy,
the sheer injustice of what was going on.
Did you have sympathy for the Bolsheviks as well?
Well, I didn't have sympathy for anybody really, except the women in the film, because Omar Sharif, the doctor, was running two separate families.
Yeah.
Okay, all the time with two separate children.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. How could any man leave Julie Christie and go and live with some Russian peasant, you know?
Well, because he was somehow duty-bound because he knew that Julie Christie wasn't right for him.
Yeah, well.
And that he wasn't right for her.
But it was fantastic.
So they were unfortunately and haplessly in love. But the point is, they were not suited to each other.
Yeah, well, I don't know who told you that. Because,
well, it's obvious. That's the sort of root of the story.
What was great about it was not only the cinematography, which showed Russia at its best in the summer and its very worst in the viciously cold winter.
It's Boris Pasternak, isn't it?
Boris Pasternak, whose granddaughter we've worked with, haven't
we? She's not granddaughter, no. She's Anna Pasternak.
Yeah.
Who is, I believe, his grandniece or something like
that.
Yeah,
grandniece, that's right. I think you're right. Yeah. Who went and married the guy from Eton, didn't she?
She married, Bill Coles.
Bill Coles, who was
used to be a Sun reporter.
Used to be, a complete flop.
He wasn't
flopped,
very good.
Flopped in everything he did. Half Bake.
I don't know if he's still around.
Turned up in New York once, didn't he? In the New York Brewer of the Sun.
Oh, did he?
And introduced me to Julie Hartley Brewer.
Did he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Oh, that must have been after my time. That's right. When you were back there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But anyway, point of my story is...
Did you watch that then? Well, one lazy Sunday afternoon.
Well, I don't know if it's a lazy Sunday afternoon because I'm usually watching football, but it might be a late night or something like that. Yeah. But it's such a poignant story. And the heartbreak in it ends at the end, of course, when he gets off the tram, runs after Julie Christie, and this is where it really got to me, because I recognised with it and wondered whether I was watching my own end.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Not my end. I mean my own demise.
It's not that kind of film.
No.
You were watching the other shit for that.
watching my own demise. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And he gets off and he runs after Julie Christie, who's unaware of the fact that he's been on the tram.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's shouting, Kanya, whatever it was her name.
Kanya, what was he shouting that for?
I don't know, yeah. Olga, or whatever her fucking name was. Olga.
Whatever your name is.
Yeah. And she's unaware of him. And guess what? He gets halfway across the square. And then, his heart goes. Yeah. He dies of a heart attack. Yeah. This could happen to me. Just imagine if I was chasing the woman,
like, for example, what if it was, what was it, Judy?
Trudy. Imagine if it was Trudy after meeting her after 30 years. And there she is. I got off the bus.
Do you think you'd recognise her?
Yeah, of course I would. Yeah, in Trafalgar Square. Trudy. Oh!
That'd be a great end for you, though.
Well, I suppose it would, but she wouldn't be aware of it.
Romantic.
But the thing is, what I didn't realise until watching it from the start is the whole story is told in reflection by Alec Guinness.
Yes, he's the narrator, isn't
he? Alec Guinness is the narrator because he's Shivago's brother.
But does he not play the horrible sort of army captain?
No. That is played by Rod Steiger. Rod Steiger?
Are you sure
I'm certain.
Thingy is not in it as well?
Who?
Are you sure that he's not in it as well?
Who? Alec Guinness is, I told you. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. But he's in it, right?
Yeah.
Tom Courtney's also in it.
That's right, yeah.
Geraldine Chaplin.
Yeah, Rod Steiger.
Julie Christie.
Yeah.
Lara, her name is.
That's right, Lara, yeah. Lara. And then he dies, and everybody surrounds him. And guess what? Mm. Lara looks back because she hears the commotion.
Right.
But because so many people have run towards Dr. Shivago,
she
doesn't know who's in the middle. Right. And such a poignant end, you know, terrible.
Yeah.
And of course, Alec Guinness, in narrating it, tells this story to his illegitimate child by his first wife, the Russian peasant woman, okay?
Okay.
Right? You know, got all that. But
I think so.
So, honestly, so...
But it was the style of those movies. David Lean had made it.
David Lean.
In the style of those great...
No, epics. David Lean made Lawrence of Arabia. I don't think he made Dr. Zhivago.
Do you not think so?
No, but the thing is, do you know, it was so cold in those days. Yeah. That, I mean, they used to make furniture out of ice to sit in because it was so cold,
really?
It never melted. Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, because you had like these great sort of Russian robes and coats on.
Hey, look at this. I've got some facts for you. Dr. Zhivago is the 8th highest grossing film of all time.
Wow.
In Canada and the United States of America.
Wow.
124 million.
Unbelievable.
Admissions.
Yes, admissions.
I don't know how much money that is if everyone's paying $10.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And or 20 bucks.
Well, they're paying more than
or
10.
Or 30 bucks.
Yeah, well, when it came out, it was 1965.
Yeah,
though.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary. But the thing is, it's so poignant, you know, the love story of them living in a nice palace together, you know?
Yeah.
The love story of when he went from his Russian peasant lady to see Julie Christie in Moscow.
It was directed by David Lean.
Yeah, directed by David Lean, yeah. Went to see his Julie Christie living in Moscow and to tell her that, you know, he couldn't see her anymore because he felt guilty. Mm. He's galloping back through the forest and all of a sudden the Red Army surround him and say, "We need the doctor." He says, "No, please, I have..."
Well, how do they know he's a doctor?
He's known to the local community. Oh, okay. He's known to the local community as Dr. Zhivago, you know. That's his name. That's why the film was called Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, no, I know
right?
that. I know that's his fucking name.
So, so he's...
Won 5 Oscars, he says it.
There you go. So he stopped in the forest and told, "You must come with us." He says, "No, please. I'm going home to my wife and my child."
Yeah.
He said, "You're going home to your wife and your child, you filthy bastard. You've just been with your mistress.
Oh,
we know you. We know your lifestyle." Right. So Dr. Zhivago is a fairly heartless shagger.
Yeah.
You know, shagging too.
Well, he's a very good-looking man, though.
Yeah, very good-looking man.
I mean...
Yeah, well, you have sympathy with mega shaggers.
Well, not really.
Because you've been one in your own lifetime.
Incorrect. This is a fictional story. I don't think you should confuse the two things.
No.
The bottom line is, right, Omar Sharif starred in those kind of epic films.
Yes.
Because he was also in Lawrence of Arabia, and he
was
also in Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
He wasn't in a lot else, really.
No, he wasn't.
And what I was going to ask you is, I don't know if you know the answer.
Yeah.
Did they film it in Russia?
Yeah, they did.
Did they film it? So, because don't forget, in 1965 it came out.
Yeah.
The Iron Curtain was well and truly up.
Wasn't it? Yeah. But there weren't many places as cold as Russia in those days, like in Siberia and places like that. But what was fantastic, and they took him away. He took him away for 2 years, and he just vanished off the face of the earth. Oh. You know. But then, in the end, he decided, I can't do this anymore. I've got to find my first wife and my second wife. So he just walked out the camp, minus 40 degrees. Yeah. Now, he had to walk for like 100 miles in minus 40 degrees.
How could he do that?
Through 2 feet of snow with no food.
No
okay?
chance.
And,
absolutely no
and
chance.
Eventually he gets back and everything's fucking frozen and, you know, the water isn't working for obvious reasons and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he finds his wife, but then she's forgotten what he looks like, thinks he's deserted her, all that kind of stuff. It's a wonderfully poignant film.
But what
film.
Made you decide to watch it?
Because I just thought, I remember that, but I never saw the whole film all the way through.
Okay.
So I watched it all the way through,
right.
You know?
Mm. Na, 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 it's kind of a woman's film, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a poignant film, poignant film.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, the other things I've been watching.
What else, yeah?
Vera.
I've been watching a bit of Vera, but I'm not sure now whether I've been watching the new Vera or the old Vera.
The new Vera's, I think, on Wednesday nights, or it might be Sunday nights, I'm not sure, but I watch them on Skybox Look Back, you know?
Yeah.
And
don't look back in anger.
Yeah, the thing about Vera is I find that most of the plots are about the same.
I think it's a bit contrived.
Some bloke gets killed, and it's usually a kid or something, and then he's been involved in a bit of drug dealing, and then his father, you know, was... abusing him, and then his mother was a prostitute, and all this kind of stuff. And it seems to be the same.
And
plot.
She turns up and has to keep talking people out of things.
Like, that's right,
and all that rubbish.
You really want to do that, pet? You want to throw yourself off this cliff? I tell you what, my fellas would have to make a terrible mess down there to get you out, you know. You don't want to be doing this, do you? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
She drives around in this battered old fucking
Land Rover. Land Rover Defender.
Excuse me. And what they do is, excuse me, a bit of the old winter flu. They're trying to make out that she works in Northumberland, but half the action's always in Newcastle because the only sort of most famous place in Northumberland is Newcastle.
I've
you know,
seen it. She's not really ever in a city though. She's normally on the moors.
Somewhere. Yeah, well, yeah, but she goes back to the city and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And she's got this fucking
it's not a million miles away, is it? Newcastle and Northumberland.
No, it's not. Hexham, like, is probably the first north in Northumberland before we get to the border.
North
That's
Hughes.
About 30 miles. No, North and South Shields is at the mouth of the River Tyne. Yeah. That's why it's called Shields.
Right.
It's called North and South Shields because of the defences they had to put up, the shield, to the Viking invaders.
Is that right?
That's why it's called North and South Shields,
Well, you learn something every day.
Yeah, and anyway, you know, she drives around looking basically gormless most of the time. She's got this this fucking assistant who's who's a real doormat lapdog called Kenny.
Right.
Hey, Kenny, have we got this? Have we got that? Right. Have you searched this? Have you done that? Have you checked them receipts, Kenny? Where was this petrol bought? You know, I need to know, Kenny. Right. And all that kind of stuff, you know.
And is he from there as well? Does he have the same accent?
No, he's Scots.
Oh, is he?
He's Scots, yeah.
Maybe I've been watching the old one then.
But the point is that it's too long.
Mm.
It's an hour and a half, right?
Yeah.
And they're too long
that
and too
a long
drawn
time,
out.
Isn't it, for a,
and do you know what? I got fed up for exactly the same reason with... what was Morse called when it wasn't Morse?
Yeah, Endeavour.
No, Endeavour was the pre-Morse. Then there was Morse. It was Lewis.
Oh, Lewis.
Lewis. So
I quite like Lewis.
I liked it more than I liked Morse. I didn't like John.
I never liked Morse.
I didn't like Morse.
I thought Morse was crap.
Morse, a boring wanker.
Yeah.
He'd drive around in a vintage Jaguar.
Really pompous as well.
Pompous. Drove around in a vintage Jaguar.
Listened to classical music.
Listened to classical music. And would say to his friend sometimes... I see. So because I don't go to the local pub every night and have 8 pints of beer, because I sit at home, listen to Tchaikovsky and have a glass of red wine and read a book written by Thomas A. Beckett, you think that I'm not an in-touch policeman, do you?
Well, I mean, you know, I've known plenty of cops over the years, right?
Oh, yeah.
I never met anyone like him.
Never.
You know?
Never. But anyway, the Lewis one was too long as well. That was an hour and a half. But getting back to Vera, what I just don't understand is that what they do is, you know, like with Columbo.
Yeah.
Columbo would suddenly say something and you think, wow, you know, that's a brilliantly incisive observation.
Yes.
Or he'd spot something and say, no, I don't get this. I don't get this. I don't get how this guy could have died after just smoking 6 cigarettes when he smokes 40 a day. Mm. And then he'll realise that the butt has been poisoned or something like that, you know. She says stupid things like, hey, Kenny, Yes, mum. Hey, Kenny, I see some tyre tracks over there on the beach. Are they tyre tracks?
Oh, let me go to... You're right, Mum. They are tyre tracks on the beach.
And there's only two of them. Why isn't somebody else there?
I don't know. You know, it's all so basic to me and so simple.
I'll tell you what I watched, which I'm going to recommend to you.
Oh, yeah?
And then you can tell us what you think of it maybe next time. You know this guy Roger Stone?
Roger Stone, who's been arrested.
He's Trump's former advisor.
Oh, yes,
arrested by the FBI in America recently, right?
Yes.
There's a great documentary about him,
right,
which is called Get Me Roger Stone. And it's all about the machinations. You love it. It's all about the machinations of these political advisors in Washington. During the 80s, he worked for Reagan.
Right.
He worked for Bush.
Right.
He also
charges hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Millions.
Yes, that's right.
These guys were making millions. The guy Manafort, who's also one of Trump's ex-assistants. But this guy is larger than life.
Right.
Because not only is he completely and utterly candid about the fact that he fucks people over.
Right,
he's like, I don't give a fuck how we win. We fucking win. And he was the guy that was also involved in Watergate.
Right.
One of the youngest guys involved in Watergate. He invented the term rat fucking.
Okay.
Which is what they call it when you just put dirty tricks on people.
Okay,
right?
But
he was destabilized out of Washington himself.
Okay.
Because the National Enquirer did a story.
Right.
Which he claims is untrue.
Right.
Which was him and his second wife acting as swingers.
Right.
Right. And they found an advert that they put in a paper saying that she liked men who were particularly well endowed.
My God, this is shocking.
And, you know,
family
viewing,
is it?
It's a fantastic show. Yeah.
Well, talking about that, another one I've seen, right, this is my third program to tell you about.
Well, we're nearly out of time, so
was about Brexit and who are the real villains of Brexit.
Oh, yeah.
And needless to say, the real villain of Brexit is David Cameron.
Right.
Completely fucked everything up.
This is not the film that was on Channel 4 with old Cumberbatch, is it?
No. No, I've seen that
crap
as well.
That was rubbish.
That was utter crap. I recorded that and watched it, and everybody said, oh, the really true story about Brexit.
Yeah,
and Cumberbatch had to play, against his own instincts, a Brexiteer rather than a Remainer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it came over all the time. His heart wasn't in the role and all that kind of stuff, making excuses. But no, the one I saw, they interviewed, for instance, George Osborne, all from Cameron's administration, George Osborne, Michael, what's his name, who lost his job because of his hand on Julia Harvey through his knee.
Yeah, Fallon.
Fallon. So they interviewed Osborne, Osborne, you know,
twat
who put the stamp duty up on
on
houses.
He was also the guy, was he not, who said that we needed to join the Euro at one point.
Oh, that's right, yeah, we wanted to join the Euro, and all this kind of stuff, right. The one guy who wouldn't be interviewed was Cameron.
Right.
The only thing they could get was a statement from Cameron saying, no, if I had my time over again, of course I'd call a referendum. It was a manifesto promise, but it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't a manifesto promise.
No.
It was an option, you know?
Yeah.
The reason he did it was because he wanted to get rid of all the responsibility for it for all time and then say, right, we don't have to do anything
like
now.
Like all these bloody prime ministers, he thought, oh, this is my chance to make history.
Yeah, that's right.
And they'll write about me like I was a big hero.
Well, no, he wanted to put Brexit to bed. But the thing is, as he had a majority, he didn't need to get a referendum because he couldn't have been unseated in the Commons.
No.
A completely fucking useless politician, one of the worst I've ever come across, who not only has, you know, done his best to try and destroy this country, its own machinations, but did definitely destroy North Africa, without a shadow of a doubt. I'm Billy Big Boots.
This is Talky Vision, by the way, and it's coming to an end.
But it was a programme. It was a programme that they touched on that. I'm Billy Big Boots. I'm going to smash up Libya and get rid of Gaddafi because I want to be a war hero like Mrs. Thatcher was. Except it all went completely wrong, particularly as he went into an allegiance with that other tosspot wanker European politician, Sarkozy, the man who married Mick Jagger's girlfriend.
Can you stop
now? Okay.
It's like the fucking Daily Politics.
Okay.
That's as the two mics.
So she opens the control with a key, goes in, locks it, then she bends over a desk.
Right.
And Corbyn, oh, it's not Jeremy Corbyn, obviously, it's not Corbyn. We're calling Corbyn for saying. He lifts her skirt, removes her underwear, and gives her a complete Rogerizing.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Oh, and this is in plain view of everybody else?
No, because the door's closed, isn't it, to the control room?
Well,
I've just told you. Yeah,
well,
I've just told you.
There's a window.
No. It's
what's Corbyn in for?
Well, some terrible murderous thing, because they're all lifers, you know, they're never going to get out. So she goes, oh, that's great, darling. Oh, that's good.
There's no necessity for that.
No. So this only takes about 5 minutes or something like that. And then, you know, she comes out.
Sounds fairly graphic, this.
It is very graphic. Oh, it's very graphic.
Is it like 15 or something?
I don't know. I watch it late
at
night.
TV now.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I'm sure you do watch it.
But
late,
anyway, so
you want to watch it again?
Yeah.
And he was the guy that was also involved in Watergate.
Right.
One of the youngest
yeah, yeah.
guys involved in Watergate.
Yeah, yeah.
He invented the term
right.
rat fucking.
Okay.
Which
yeah.
is what they call it when you just put dirty tricks
right.
on.
Right. Okay, yeah.
But
yeah.
He was destabilised out of Washington himself.
Okay.
Because the National Enquirer did a story.
Right.
Which he claims is untrue.
Right.
Which was him and his second wife
yeah.
acting as swingers.
Right.
Right. And they yeah. found an advert that they put in a paper
yeah.
saying that she liked men who were particularly well endowed.
My God, this is shocking.
And, you know,
it's family
a
viewing, is it?
It's
yeah.
a fantastic show. Yeah.
For some unknown reason, she wears incredibly tight tops,
right.
very low cut, an open cardigan over her enormous bust, which is sticking out.